Hey everybody, just a quick reminder before we get into the Aftershock Monday episode. The Jeremy Dale Kickstarter for the Skyward Omnibus still has 24 days to go, and as of Sunday night, it is 73% funded. So I'm going to play a quick clip for you so you can hear what it's all about. If you want to know more, go back and listen to the special, and then we'll go right into the interview with Christopher Sabella for Aftershock Monday, talking all about his new comic, Cold War.
Well, you mentioned Skyward. I mentioned it as well. You know, I've talked about it on the other podcast, but maybe some of our listeners aren't that familiar. So why don't you tell them what Skyward's all about?
Sure. For those of you that don't know, Skyward is one of those all ages light fantasy adventure about a boy and his dog that need to unite the entire world against the dark army of the Brother Kings. If you like things like Legends of Zelda or like Lord of the Rings, it's right up your alley. This is a little less like adult than something like Game of Thrones.
Why don't you let us know what this Kickstarter that you have going, and there will be a link in the show notes and all this information, everyone, so don't worry. But why don't you tell us, Kelly, what the Kickstarter is actually going to be funding?
Okay, so because we're talking Skyward, Jeremy created Skyward to be an ongoing series. I mean, he had this sucker planned out until at least issue 50. And it kind of saddens me that you guys don't get to see what his grand idea was. But he left issue 9 on such a cliffhanger that I felt like it was my responsibility as his good wife, as well as a fan of Skyward, to at least bring out an issue 10. So that way it will give us all a little bit of closure. Now, it doesn't actually end the series. So in your imagination, you can keep it going. And if I ever decide to do anything with it later in maybe another medium, then I can. But this will give all the fans a little bit of closure. So issue 10 is going to be a 32-page issue. I took Jeremy's ideas for issue 10, and I went to our friend Barbara Kessel, the comic writer and editor. And she actually developed a script that works. Shannon Gallant, amazing man that he is, also a G.I. Joe artist, drew the entire issue. And now it's at the colors with Catherine Leno and Laura Martin. And what I decided to do was I don't want there just to be an issue 10 and that's it. So I did a Kickstarter for the Jeremy Dale Skyward Omnibus. So that Omnibus is going to cover issues 1 through 9, plus you'll get issue 10 in there, and you're going to get all of the variant cover arts by all the different artists Jeremy had, such as Phil Noto, Darwin Cook, Stefan Rue, Tom Zoller, Mike Norton, David Peterson. I mean, it's a huge list.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about kind of the business end of Kickstarter, because I know people sometimes don't realize the way that it works. And you know, even though it's only been a week or so and it's already at 57%, I know a lot of times there's a lot of excitement early on and you know, it gets to 80 or 90% and it kind of dies out. So if you're planning on pledging, do it sooner than later, because it doesn't get produced unless it gets to 100%. So,
yeah. Well, and I'm glad that you brought this up, because some people don't realize when it comes to Kickstarter, you can pledge whatever you want. Like, you can do an incentive. Your credit card is not charged until we hit our end date, which is March 8th. And if we hit the 100%, if we hit that $20,000 or we're above it. So if you're thinking about, well, I would really like to donate or do an incentive, but I don't get paid until next week, that's fine. Just go ahead and grab the incentive, especially if it's one of the ones that there's only one of. Grab it now. You're not going to actually be charged until March 8th.
Yeah, and it's so easy. We're all so busy. It's so easy to forget. So do it. Open another tab right now while you're listening to this, or if you're in the car, you know, as soon as you get where you're going, as soon as you finish listening to the podcast. Yeah. Don't get on your phone while you're driving, but yeah, do it sooner than later, because it's really easy to forget. So.
And truthfully, the reception has been amazing so far, and the outpouring of love and support has been amazing. But until we hit this 20,000, even though I'm very confident that we will, I'm going to still be like a little anxious and freaking out. So please don't let Kelly freak out.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. It's Monday. That's right. And here at the Comic Source, we're doing our best to make your Mondays better with Aftershock Mondays. So there's a new series coming out from Aftershock this Wednesday, just in time for Valentine's Day. Be sure to get out there and pick one up, copy of this issue for your special someone. It's Cold War by Chris Sabala and Hayden Sherman. And I'm lucky enough to have the writer, Chris Sabala, joining me on the podcast. So, Chris, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So, for some of our listeners who may not be familiar with your work, why don't you give us a quick rundown how you got your start in comics, maybe some past work of yours that they've seen?
Okay. I started putting out comics in like 2011. My first book was an Image book called Screamland. And then from there, I just kind of, started pitching everywhere. So I've done several creator owned books like, High Crimes and Welcome Back and Dead Letters and Heartthrob. And, I've also done a bunch of work for Hire stuff. I've written, Injustice Ground Zero for DC. I'm writing, a Ghost Rider one shot for Marvel right now. And, I have a bunch of Beyond Cold War. I have a couple other new books coming out this year. So I'm pretty busy right now.
That's awesome. Ghost Rider has always been one of my favorite characters since I was a kid.
Same here.
I look forward. So that was a little bit of a dream come true then, huh?
Yeah. Like I grew up reading, I'm writing Johnny Blaze, but I grew up reading Danny Ketch, which was my first introduction to Ghost Rider. But yeah, I thought like that book was completely badass. And yeah, just like, you know, and it's hard to deny that Ghost Rider is just like a really cool character.
Yeah, great visual.
I don't know. The fact that they let me like, here you go, here's 20 pages and you can kind of do whatever you want within this framework is it's pretty weird.
Did you always want to be a comic book writer growing up?
I mean, I always wanted to be a writer. It took me a while to get around to focusing on comics. You know, for a long time, I was a prose writer. And I did some journalism stuff and I wrote novels, and stuff like that. So I think I was just like really snobby, about comics. Like I've had like this weird on again, off again relationship with comics all my life where I will like abandon comics and then I will come back to comics. So I think I was just like in one of those abandonment periods and I don't know. Yeah. I always just thought like, well, you know, I have to put a book out. I have to put out a prose book. Like that's what matters. And,
right.
You know, you get to the point where you're just like, oh, well, I'm never going to put anything out because books are really hard to write and they're hard to finish. And then you have to figure out, you know, how to get an agent and how to sell it, all that. And that was the thing that always just held me up. So I've always, you know, been in the comics world to some degree. So I finally decided, you know, to stop being such a snob and to, you know, finally like try my hand at comics and everything just clicked then. It was like, oh, like this I get, this I can do. So.
Right. Well, this is a bit unusual for me, this particular book that we're talking about, because normally when I have someone on to talk about an issue, I've gotten a preview copy and read it myself.
You didn't get one?
I didn't get one. And I'm sure it was an oversight by Aaron. And I didn't really pursue it because I kind of thought, well, you know what? I read the preview pages that got released, you know, a few weeks back. And I was so intrigued. And so like, I can't wait to read this. That I wanted to actually do the interview with you without having read it because I think it would bring like a level of excitement because I'm really, really excited for this. And cool. I'm going to read it, you know, I'll probably still get an advanced copy this weekend. And then talk about it you know, on our New Comics Wednesday episode. So no, I haven't read. I've read the preview pages, and they blew me away. I'm super intrigued. So why don't you tell our listeners what's the basic premise of Cold War?
Okay. Well, at the heart of Cold War is this process called cryonic suspension, which is, you know, any sci-fi movie where people go into like hypersleep, same thing. But it's basically, it's happening now and has been for the last 20 years where there are certain facilities you can go in, you pay them a certain amount of money, and when you die, they will cut your head off and put it into deep freeze. And it's all based on the notion of like, well, someday there will be technology that will allow us to regrow your body and, you know, bring you back to life, and we'll be able to like cure any disease that killed you. So you'll get a whole fresh start. So Cold War is about people who signed up for this process and they're finally getting revived. And, you know, they're in the middle of like getting their introduction speech to welcome to the new world 500 years in the future. And that gets interrupted by the president telling them that there's actually a war going on, and if they want to stick around, they're going to have to fight. So it's these people from 500 years ago who, you know, paid a bunch of money so they could live on in the future and sort of have a perfect second chance at life, and they get dropped into the middle of a war zone that they don't understand.
Talk about a twist of fate, right? I mean, you think, I'm going to pay this money, and when, you know, whatever terrible disease killed me or old age or whatever, I'm going to have a brand new body, and the future is going to be wonderful and bright and shiny, and I can't wait to wake up, and, you know, it's like time travel almost, and they wake up, and it's kind of the worst thing imaginable, right? Like, okay, now we're going to throw you into the meat grinder.
Yeah, it was kind of like the darkest joke. That I remember I made it at a bar one night when I was hanging out with somebody, and I remember just kind of like joking about it. And then I remember they went to go get a drink, and the more I thought about it, I was like, that's actually like, there's a lot of potential there for a lot of like fun stuff. So yeah, it just kind of like caught me instantly. And that was like, I mean, almost like 5 years ago. So I've been working on it for a while.
So it's always been in the back of your head, kind of playing around with it and figuring out, and then finally you're done with the world building and you're ready to get started, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I went through a lot of different iterations of like how I perceive this book going. And, you know, so, and every time I would kind of come back to it, stuff would change, some stuff for the worse, mostly for the better. And then finally, when I started talking with Aftershock, that was like, I just kind of took all my notes that I had been making and sort of diluted them down into like, okay, I'll get rid of all the crap and I'll keep all the really cool stuff. And so, yeah, like as much as it sucked to like wait 5 years to be able to tell this story, like I feel like at least like, it was worth it that it was like 5 years of fixing things.
Right. And you're at a great publisher, right? Like I love Aftershock. The people over there are great people. They're a great support system, but yet you have the complete freedom to tell the story that you want to tell.
Yeah. It's been kind of amazing. You know, I only started talking to Aftershock. I mean, it was sometime last year, honestly. Like, I think it was around maybe like March or April. And Cold War was one of the pitches I sent them. And immediately they were like, we love this. We want to do this. And then they were like, hey, we got Hayden Sherman. What do you think of him? And I was like, this is all moving so fast. You know, you just like, I'm just used, you know, sometimes comics is just glacial in pace. Right. So I'm used to a lot of sitting around and waiting, and it was just like everything was moving so fast, and it gets you, you know, it's great because, you know, it gets you re-excited for that project. You know, I mean, one of the downsides of like having a story sit in your head for 5 years is that, you know, like some of that initial enthusiasm is bound to burn away.
Right.
So, but, you know, yeah, hooking up with Aftershock, like they were like, all right, let's do this. Like, we love this. We want to put our weight behind it. And it got me like re-excited about it and really like eager to dive back in.
Yeah, and you said, so they brought Hayden to you. How's that collaboration been?
Great. Like, Hayden is so insanely talented, and he's ridiculously young too. He's like, I think he's like 22 or something, like 21. I don't know. I think he like just graduated from college. It's kind of annoying, like how good he is already. Like, he did that book, The Few at Image, like while he was still in school. So yeah. And he's doing our book alongside another book that he's drawing at the same time. But yeah, like, he's fast, but he's like really good. He has a solid vision of his own. Like, he takes my scripts and turns them into something completely different. Like, it's kind of like, I never pictured this book looking the way it does now, but now that Hayden is, you know, creating the book with me, there's no other way I could see it.
Yeah, I feel like I had read an interview you gave about the book about merging the genres. You know, you've got the sci-fi element with, you know, the future and the you know, cryonics. You've got clearly it's a war comic. There's a war going on, and you've also got some crime and some horror elements that you mentioned. And what I find interesting, so I haven't ever seen any of Hayden's work before, but I feel like this style is probably absolutely perfect for that sort of mixing of genres.
Oh yeah. Yeah, because he can, you know, like, I don't, you know, my one big failing is like, I can't draw. And so like artists are like magic to me. Like, it's just like, I get pages back and I'm just like, I don't understand how you made your hand do that. And especially with Hayden, like, you know, he can, all his stuff is just like so crazy looking, but you know, he can just like really dial in and like render an expression like kind of perfectly well to turn something really dramatic. Or, you know, when he shows like bodies getting dissolved by future weapons, like it's horrifying to look at, but he makes it all feel consistent. I mean, that's definitely, the one reason he's kind of perfect on this is that, you know, trying to smash a bunch of different genres together, you can get some weird edges where things don't completely mesh up. But if you get a co-creator who has a solid vision, then, you know, he's able to take all those different elements and pour them into one template, and it all looks completely natural and feels right.
Now, has that been the biggest challenge, merging all these different genres, these different aspects of the story? Or do you feel like that was kind of your idea all along?
Yeah, that was kind of my idea all along. So that, like, in the writing, it wasn't that hard. I mean, honestly, like, the weirdest thing about the writing is that the book became a lot funnier than it was. And it's not a laugh riot of a book, but I, you know, there's this whole technology in our book, all the soldiers who we call cryonauts, they're all issued these helmets, which are for protection, but are also, they come preloaded with all their memories. So like, if they're in the midst of battle, if they're just like freaking out and decide that they don't want to fight anymore, they can tell the helmet like, "Hey, play my happiest memories." And they can just like sit down and like watch a slideshow of their old life as they get chewed up by enemy fire. But the helmet like talks to them, kind of like that, you know, that Microsoft Clippy, the Microsoft Word assistant who would pop up and be like, I noticed you're writing a letter. Can I help you? So like, just having that one vein of sort of levity, it's just, you know, I don't want to like hang out in the gloom all the time. Like, as much of a bummer as this book can be at times, I still want it to be fun. So I think the humor has been the hardest part for me. But also that stuff, I think doing humor in a way that isn't like totally wrong, I guess, because I have an inappropriate sense of humor. So I have to remember, like, oh, this isn't just like a joke I'm telling myself. Like, this is going to be put on paper and other people are going to read it.
Well, the other thing is it seems like it's going to be a large cast of characters, or at least has the potential of that, because you can constantly be bringing in more cryonauts as they, you know, are awakened, which, by the way, is just the coolest term, cryonaut. I love that. As fun as it is, and, you know, you said it was kind of natural to merge all these genres. It was kind of your initial idea in the first place. It still has to be about the people and the characterization, right? Like, we have to be able to relate to these people and care what happens to them. Otherwise, you know, no one's going to read the story. So that's got to be interesting, because you're taking all these cryonauts and they're all kind of in the same situation, but they've got to be kind of unique.
Yeah. I mean, we have a core cast of characters that we focus on. And then, you know, it's like any war story. Like, you can't tell everybody's story, but you can focus on a cross section. So we kind of have our main characters. But yeah, one of the big things that appeals to me about this book is that we can, it's a war, so people die all the time. So we can have a character who people have grown attached to, and we can just blow them up. And it's like, well, sorry, like, it's a war. And now you have to move on. And we can bring new people in, like you said. There's a character in the book that you actually don't meet for several issues. But she's one of the main characters of the book. So, I don't know. I find it weird to like talk about it. It's just like, I don't know. So much of this is just like kind of locked up in my head.
Right. I always found it interesting how writers could kind of get inside their different characters. I mean, because at the end of the day, they're kind of all speaking with your voice, because you know, you're speaking through them, but you give them all your unique voice. And it's always something that's fascinated me about, you know, any type of writer, when they're writing characters, they can make them all unique and give them their own, you know, way of speaking and their own kind of tone and voice. So I guess for you, that could be even more of a challenge if you're constantly rotating people in and out.
Yeah, but I mean, I do a thing with my writing where before I start writing a book, and this is like when I start working with an artist, I will sit down and I write out character sketches of all the main characters. So, and the way I do character sketches is like, I don't really focus on describing their physical attributes. It's more about, you know, sort of their background and their personality. And you know, where they're going to be going in the story. I feel like I have a pretty good sense of them by the time I sit down to write them. So I like to do my homework in that respect. I still leave a lot of stuff kind of as a big question mark, because one of the fun parts of writing is sort of figuring things out as you're working on something. Suddenly you could just write like a toss away line and it'll kind of cut to the heart of what this character is about. You never realized it this whole time. So that's one of the most fun parts of writing for me, is like, I don't know.
Having the story like, take on kind of a life of its own, and the characters.
Yeah. And like, you know, the way that like the different levels of your consciousness are working, like, you know, I am consciously sitting down and writing this stuff, but like, sometimes I'm just like, you know, like my hands are moving and making things happen, and it takes my brain a couple seconds to catch up, right, and sort of figure out what I've just done. You know, I've always been kind of been fascinated by the human brain and how it works. And now that I'm a writer, like, even more so, because I wish I could make my brain work better and just kind of access this stuff directly, but it's very finicky. So I kind of have to wait for it to want to help me.
Well, I know another one of the things that makes for a really good writer, really good comic stories, is when writers pull from their own experiences, you know, it helps to make it more relatable and mm-hmm. everything. But that's got to be a challenge in a book like this, because I hope for your sake, Chris, that you're not living a life full of war and crime and horror.
Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, it makes it kind of easier when you're doing – something so kind of big and crazy. Like the baseline for like characters just kind of gets elevated. Like, I don't know, like, because there's such a spectacle of the war going on and all this future stuff and the mystery swirling around of like, where are we and who are we fighting and why, allows you to, you know, like sort of, yeah, like, I don't know, sort of they're hit character beats that, I mean, there's nothing about any of these characters that I directly relate to in terms of their life experience. I mean, there are definitely some parts, though, because a lot of the book focuses on what their lives were like before they got frozen and like what led them to getting themselves frozen. So there's still a lot of backstory that takes place in a semi-relatable environment, but I don't know. Sometimes it's just easier to just make stuff up out of whole cloth and not have to sort of dredge through your personal experiences.
Right.
You're just like, no, I'm just going to make everything up. I'm just going to go as crazy as possible. And, you know, yeah, I'll leave the introspection for the next book.
There you go. Let's talk a little bit about the setting. I think in some of the best books, the setting itself kind of takes on its own character. And I got the sense right away, on the preview page, when the president starts speaking, that's probably going to happen in this book, that, you know, the future, the war itself, and the overall kind of tone and what's the word I'm searching for? Just the feel that the world has, you know, like that era mm-hmm. that they've woken up is really going to become a character in and of itself.
Yeah. I mean, for this, it's kind of hard. I mean, like, the world is definitely a character, but when our cryonauts go out and our, you know, the ship doors open, like they're walking out into like a battlefield that has clearly been fought on many times before. So it's, you know, it's bombed out and ruined and everything's falling apart. And I think it's more, I don't know that like our world is as much like a character of the book as the questions about our world. Because I do my best to like try and answer some questions, but also keep it pretty fuzzy while also providing new details. Like, I don't know. I want to slowly unspool this and sort of slowly show you the bigger world that all this is taking place in. So for this, it's very much more driven by the characters, and the world is sort of the thing that's kind of pushing them forwards, and especially like pushing them against each other, because like not only are they fighting wars against the enemy, they're also a bunch of people all thrown together in a very volatile situation. So they start, you know, kind of bumping up against each other too.
So it's almost like you're saying the kind of the political climate and the world and the situation is almost like the, almost like the antagonist in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we don't have we don't have like a mini boss, or, you know, we don't have a Ganon or anything. There's right. not, because, you know, I don't know, like with war, there's no such thing. There's no, you know, troops being dropped on a battlefield. They are usually not tasked with like, here is the one person who controls this entire war, and if we right. kill them, everything's cool. Like, it's always just like, I'm not sure why we're here. I just know that we have to kill everybody who's trying to kill us. So yeah, I mean, I wanted to keep that accurate. Like, I didn't want this to feel like a video game war. Even though there's a lot of parts of it that definitely feel pretty video gamey, and, you know, I don't know. Some books, I'm not really entirely sure what I'm doing the entire like, I sort of know what I'm doing with Cold War, but there's also just like a lot that I am still figuring out as I'm writing it. Especially about the world and the climate, and I don't know. The deeper we go, the more stuff will reveal. And so you know, like I just keep throwing more questions in my path. And so I'm trying to answer those while also making a satisfying story.
All right. Like you said, you want to have room to have it grow organically. And I, you know, if you come up with so many ideas and you're too rigid, then the story kind of suffers. Then you end up having to force the characters into directions that maybe don't feel natural with the
character. Oh, for sure. Growth. Yeah. And that's the last thing I want to do is, I mean, I always used to like make fun of writers when I would hear them describe their characters, like telling them, like, I wouldn't do that until I started writing. And then I was like, oh, crap, it's real.
Yeah, now I get it.
So, I try to, you know, first and foremost is like be true to my characters. And then secondly, to sort of ensure that my stories make sense on a logical level. I really stress out about that stuff, and I try to make sure I've answered most of the questions for myself. That it makes sense to me and it tracks. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to at least be somewhat satisfying. Be like, okay, here's how this is solved. Like, let's move on. You know, I don't want to sit here all day and explain every piece of minutiae. So
yeah. Now, do you have a specific arc or specific number of arcs in mind? You have you know how it starts, obviously. Do you know how it ends, or is it open-ended, miniseries, maxi series?
I'm still kind of waiting to see how we do. You know, I'm writing this as a 5-issue series, which I would definitely like at least like another arc if I could get one, just to kind of build up things a little bit more and take it a little bit further. But, you know, I also like 5 issues is more than I've been offered on this book before. And it's kind of the perfect number, I think. So, I don't know, like, you know, the way I have it in my head, I know how it ends. But I also know how it can keep going, you know, like the whole premise is that, you know, there are hundreds of thousands of people who have themselves frozen. So there are an infinite amount of stories that we could tell,
right,
of new Cryonauts coming in and, you know, going back to visit old ones and, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely pushed it to Aftershock as like, you know, hey, like this really opens up a much bigger world that we could get into if we wanted to, but I try not to presume that I'm going to get more than 5 issues. So I'm kind of writing for that right now. And if we get more, then awesome. I have a plan for that.
Yeah. I mean, it is a fascinating idea, and it's not, you know, it's not 100% original, you know, having someone frozen and, you know, wake up in the future.
Sure.
In fact, there's
Demolition Man.
Yeah. Demolition Man. When I first heard about the premise of this, I thought about there's a Star Trek The Next Generation episode where they find these three people that were frozen back in the 1980s, you know, the actual time the TV show was airing, and they woke up, you know, in Star Trek future. So, but yeah, it's a fascinating idea. And I love the fact that you talked about, yeah, if you know, the sales are there and keep telling more stories, you can move, you know, forward in the future. You could come back and, you know, tell a story that's only, you know, maybe 20 years in the future from our present time. It's, I mean, I keep going back to that term cryonauts, and, you know, you think of astronauts as, you know, exploring space, and these cryonauts in their own way could really explore time, you know.
Yeah. That's the thing is that, you know, not everybody who is showing up is from the same time era. So yeah, we could, you know, keep telling, like, I mean, we could keep moving forward into a speculative future, and, you know, there's like a 500 year gap. So I don't know. One of the exciting things about when I built the concept was that, like, it's like, wow, there's just like so many different ways we can veer on this. And that's, you know, I would love it if we got another arc. Like, I would definitely love to start playing around with the rules that I've established for myself. Because that's kind of one of the fun things about writing a series is, like, if you do that first arc and it's like, okay, here's the rules. And then you try and figure out like, how do I break them without like violating the reader's trust? So yeah, I've got buttloads of ideas and buttloads of characters who I'd love to bring forward. So yeah, just kind of like fingers crossed, hope people dig it and hope it does okay.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about the collaboration process with that you have with Hayden and his artwork. When he was brought on, did you, you know, give him like a general idea of the different characters and he came back with kind of sketches? How did that
Yeah, like the thing I was talking about doing my character breakdowns, I did that for him for what were our six main characters. So he came back with rough sketches of them. He also came back with some sketches of the enemies. And like he sent this one actually that, you know, it was like it came with a block of text next to it. And it was like, well, I wasn't sure what direction you were thinking of going, but I was thinking of this. And that changed the whole story idea for me. And I was like, you know, I wasn't thinking of that at all, but I think that's really cool. So let's incorporate that. So yeah, it's just been like, I don't know. He just comes like, you know, from the very first moment we started talking about it, like he was already contributing to the story and sort of changing my ideas of where we could go with it. And then, you know, after that, it's mostly just been kind of adjusting to writing for Hayden, you know, cause writing every artist, you sort of ideally want to tailor yourself to fit their style. The problem is that like Hayden's style is so flexible that it's kind of hard to write for him. Cause it's just like, oh, well I can throw anything at this guy and he'll just do it. So it kind of spoils me as a writer.
Well, it sounds like you and Hayden may need to work on some more projects in the future if you guys work that well together, if it clicks and it feels natural. Because I love it when a writer and an artist kind of just really gel, and then they can tell – it doesn't matter what, you know, what character, what kind of story they're telling. They just kind of get in each other's heads and it, you know, becomes like shorthand. And you can think of, you know, a lot of examples. Tom King and Mitch Gerrards right now are a great example of that with what they're doing on Mr. Miracle and what they did on Sheriff of Babylon and stuff. So,
yeah, and I've been lucky to, you know, I have a couple different collaborations like that. Like, you know, Ibrahim Mustafa and I, who we did High Crimes together, our next book, we already have it basically figured out. It's just trying to find a window to work on it again. And I've been talking to Chris Visions lately about working with him again. So I've been fortunate that like on the creator on stuff I've done, I've been lucky enough to get paired with artists who not only are like great artists, but also just like genuinely good people and who make me a better writer. So yeah, but like that's sort of my ideal is like if I find somebody I work well with, I want to put a ring on their finger and be like, please, like you don't have to be exclusive to me. Like it doesn't have to be monogamous, but I would like you to at least like hang out with me for a couple of weeks a year.
Sounds good. Well, I hope our listeners get out there and pick up Cold War. Remember, it comes out this Wednesday, Valentine's Day, February 14th. And if anyone wants to follow you, Chris, on social media, find out what other work you have coming up. What's the best way to get information and all that stuff?
Probably the ideal way is on Twitter. And I'm at Xtop, X-T-O-P, or I try to keep my website updated. And that's ChristopherSabella.com. And those are my two mainstays.
All right. Well, I really want to thank you for joining me. Good luck with the book. I know I'm going to be picking it up. Once I read it, I'll be telling our listeners without spoiling, because I hear there's a big twist at the end of the first issue, so we'll see. But I'll definitely keep all our Aftershock listeners updated with what's going on. And like I said, Chris, thanks a lot and best of luck on the book. Hope it sells really well.
Thanks a lot. I hope you enjoy it when you get to read it.
All right, everybody, don't forget to go to the Comic Source blog for all past episodes of the podcast. Over on Facebook and Instagram, just do a search for the Comic Source. That's the best way to keep up to date with all our convention coverage and to find out when a new episode drops. Twitter.com/the Comic Source is where you can find us on Twitter. We really appreciate you listening, and we'll talk to you next time.